Michigan HockeyCast 6.22, where hockey matches football going back to back to back. Alex, you've done your fair share of traveling for things in the past in terms of like Michigan sports and covering things media-wise, yes?
Yeah, a decent amount.
Do you normally get like parking or try to foot it, or like are you at media places where you can be shuttled, that kind of thing?
We generally try and get parking passes if it was like road football games.
Yeah. Are you usually with vehicle?
What do you mean?
Well, like, so you did softball, right? Did you guys road trip down there?
To
Florida?
To Florida. No, we flew there.
Okay. So then how did you get to the stadium?
We rented a car.
Oh, so you still had a car even when you went?
Yeah.
Okay. Generally, like, I've driven.
Softball is never bad because they don't, they're really never charging for parking at any softball.
Well, yeah. Tournament. I mean, it would be like a dollar or something to pay the attendant with the like the orange flags that are like.
Yeah, when I went to Tampa and I went to California, same story. It was just big parking lots.
Yeah,
just pull up and park.
So when I all right. So generally, when I've gone, I've mostly driven to things, and then like more recently had to fly. So I flew to St. Louis because Maryland Heights is not St. Louis. We've been calling it St. Louis. That is sort of a lie. It is outside of St. Louis.
Sure.
Almost in the Missouri River, not the Mississippi. So my buddy and I, or he met me there. He goes by Worldwide Vince. We got a place that was like a mile away, because I was like, well, I want to walk to this. Like, I don't want to have to like, you know, Uber around, and we weren't going to rent a car and all that. So, but it's in like an industrial park. So there is a river, a casino, a community ice center, on sort of office industrial complex, and then like four hotels. So you have these like roads that are very circuitous.
How far was it from the casino?
To what?
The rink.
I don't know. Like maybe a couple football fields. No, it's more. Yeah, it's more than that. It's like less than a quarter mile, probably.
Okay,
quarter mile. You can see it
because I originally wrote that it was attached to the casino, and then people were like, no, it's not attached to the casino.
Really?
Down the street from the casino.
How did these people know?
I don't know. It was one person.
They Google Maps'd it?
I don't know. It was a very strange thing to be fired up about.
So,
here to defend the sanctity of the 2,500-seat practice arena.
So, it's not... Okay, so it's not a practice arena. Like, I thought it was. It's not. There. I mean, it is, but there's like three rinks in there. It's like the ice cube. So the practice facility is in the back. That's where the Blues practice. But then where Lindenwood plays is in an actual like arena. I don't think the Blues practice in an arena. I think they practice in the NHL practice facility. And then there's a third ice rink off to the side. So it's actually it actually is a community ice center. But the casino is like within sight distance easily. You just have to walk across a couple of parking lots. And in fact, most of the traffic was going to the casino and not to the game, unsurprisingly. So, but our hotel is in a different direction, and it's in the middle of the afternoon. And I was like, well, let's just walk. And I don't want to Uber like a mile. That's seems kind of lame, especially in the middle of the day. So we start walking and we run into like, we get almost there. We're kind of weaving around, and then we come up to a creek. And we can't cross the creek. I mean, we're not going to ford it. I mean, I suppose we could if we would have brought a raft. So we had to walk down and around. But there's no sidewalk. So we're walking on like the side of like this four-lane road. And like people are driving by and honking at us. And somebody like stuck their head out the window and started taunting us. I mean, I was wearing like professional clothes. And obviously, you know, Vince had his Michigan jersey on, so maybe they thought, oh, whatever, you know, like these guys are walking the game or they're fans. So then you come over around the curve, and so we're on like a hillside as we're kind of on, because there's the road is elevated. And of course we cross a, you know, into the little area where the road goes down to the ice arena, and it says like no pedestrian walking. But anyway, that was I probably just should have Ubered. Or later we found that there was a way you could have gone around the creek to the north side and back, and we did that on Sunday, and that was a lot better. But that was quite an experience, and it was like 75 or 80 degrees out, so you get in the arena and you're like, wow, I've just had like a workout and I'm sweating because it's hot out, and I'm carrying a backpack and have like professional clothes on. So, and then you get into the arena and they have like folding tables as press row. So like they're not there ever. So they don't have press row.
Well, it's a practice facility. They obviously aren't going to have.
No, it's where Lindenwood plays. Do they not have people that cover their games?
They have like four. It's Lindenwood. I mean, who's sending opposing media to Lindenwood? I mean,
Stonehill.
They barely get anyone to travel there. I mean, I don't know how many home games they probably play, but not that many.
But they probably have a radio crew that does their games. Like the radio crews maybe. And the stats people all had to like sit at these folding tables that if you had giants in front of you in terms of like people watching the game, you wouldn't have been able to see. It would be like your thing from watching games at Munn where everyone's standing up and you're like, well, hey, I'm here to do my job.
That the arena capacity is about the exact same as the facility that PWHL Toronto plays in. And that was the same story. Like the media was just at tables, like at the top of the sections and stuff. I mean, that's, I think, fairly typical for an arena that size, because you're just not going to have a nice press box or anything for an arena that size.
So I guess my takeaway is I should stop complaining about empty regionals in random small towns that are not 25,000 or 2,500 seat arenas, because like the experience in Allentown was like just infinitely better, like at least from a media perspective.
Well, because that was an AHL arena,
right? And so you actually have facilities for that kind of stuff. And I mean, they tried. And here, I'm not like slamming these people or anything. It's just like I'm just kind of curious as to why you would send sort of three prominent, I mean, Western's big, so four prominent schools and programs to that level of that sort of an arena.
It appears Lindenwood had 10 home games this season.
Right.
Augustana, Long Island, Stonehill, Anchorage, and Western.
But I mean, Anchorage is
Western's your
hockey
one,
beat Western, is massive.
Western's your one power conference team on that list.
Yeah. I mean, I assume people still have staff that have to sit there and do things.
Probably.
I mean, you know, we walked by like the analytics guys and the stats guys and all that stuff, and they had to sit there too. It's not just media. So,
speaking of which, does not appear that Lindenwood has hired a new coach yet.
No?
They fired Rick Zombo in late February. Better get on that.
Yeah, I mean, sure. also, is it interesting that they fired... this is kind of getting off track. It's interesting that they fired him. Like, did you think you were going to make the tournament? I don't really understand.
He's not doing enough winning.
I mean, they did some winning.
He went 13-40-5 in Lindenwood's time in D1.
Yeah, and I'm guessing that they were a bottom two or three team in... for most of that time, and if they weren't, that seems like a win. But anyway, so the experience was definitely interesting. So I guess like don't complain about something because things could be different. Anyway, all right, we should speed into the games because there's actually a lot to talk about instead of going on about trekking, I suppose. So a bunch of people have asked me in the last day or two, you know, at my day job and other places, like, you know, oh, you were at the games, what was it like and stuff, and I was just like, this was probably the best regional or set of hockey games that I've maybe ever been to, like in terms of like a group and of games, not just like a one-off or a series or like things like that, but like a setting of a mini tournament. Like all three of these games, both Michigan games and then the state Western game, were insane, and they all came down to the end. There, everything was super hyped. Obviously, you know, there weren't, it could have been more fans in different settings and all that. It's not what I'm trying to get to, but I thought that the hockey, the on ice hockey and matchups and drama and all of that was more than what you could have asked for.
There were very, very few blowouts this whole weekend, really.
Sans a couple of the one seeds.
In the tournament. Yeah, and even those were, like, interesting.
Tight for a while?
Yeah, I think both games were one goal to, like, the end of the second period. And then, or maybe midway through the second period.
Yeah.
And then the gap kind of widened. But they were, last year, the tournament was really a kind of a dud in that first round. Because, like, Ohio State just embarrassed whoever they played. Penn State embarrassed Tech. Like, there, yeah. Last year, there were a lot of just, like, wow, these two teams, even in the 2-3 matchup, do not belong on the same ice.
Yeah.
And this year, a lot of overtime games, a lot of one-goal games. It was very competitive.
So we both sort of previewed the North Dakota-Michigan game as being tight. And, like, we probably, I don't know, the teams kind of matched up really, really well. And it definitely played out that way on the ice. I thought it was interesting that Michigan kind of flipped their lines a little bit before the game. Like, they dropped Duke to the third line, moved Estapa up with Nazer, and Duke was down with TJ and I think Moldenauer. Did you read anything into that? I mean, they jumbled their lines throughout that game, as you know, they sort of struggled offensively for periods of time. But did you find interesting that they would make a change like that going into such a big game?
Not necessarily. I mean, whatever you think is the spark that you need to get it done is what you're going to do. I mean, I'd rather see a little tinkering than, you know, purely holding the line, but...
Yeah. Okay. North Dakota probably had their best stretch of play in the early going. Michigan looked, I don't know, I don't want to say asleep, but they were definitely getting outplayed. Like, in the first probably 12 or so minutes of the game, 12, 13 minutes, like, shots were 6-1 North Dakota. And, you know, the funny thing is that both of the power plays in the game, because there were only two, which was something to talk about, both of the power plays happen in, like, the very early stretch of the game. And, like, you know, Michigan gets theirs, and then North Dakota gets theirs, like, on an overlap.
Yeah.
So neither team actually had a full power play in this game. And you kind of felt that way. Like, watching the Western and State game, you were like, well, you know, there's not that many penalties called, where there's going to be an adjustment period from Big Ten to NCAA. So you're just not going to get that many. But I was still a little bit surprised that, like...
Well, they really didn't call anything in the Michigan State Western game.
There was a couple, but yeah.
There was one on each team.
Yeah.
Western scored on theirs in the middle of the second period, and then MSU got one late in the second, and they didn't score. But remember, in the MSU-Western game, there was that crazy hit in the third period where that Western guy just...
Oh, that, he hit Niehaus, right?
No, it was Gucciardi.
Oh.
And he missed the...
Oh, because that's why he...
Yeah, game.
Came out the next
one. Yeah, that was a crazy hit.
Yeah.
I mean, that Western dude... I mean, that could have been charging. I mean,
was that should that have been a penalty?
He came up the wall and, like, 3-4 strides just, like, left and tackled the guy. I mean, I watched, I was like, oh my God, that guy just got killed. and I was looking at that, and I was kind of like, man, if this is a Big Ten, I think that's probably 5-minute major. And they were like, nope. And so that kind of set the tone, I felt like, going into the second game, because it was kind of like, these guys, they're not calling anything.
Yeah. So Michigan has their first power play chance, and they create maybe like one look, and then North Dakota actually gets a chance, and they hit the iron, and then Brindley gets called for his hooking. And so you're going to have a short period of 4-on-4 before you go back to the North Dakota power play. And on 4-on-4 is where you have the breakdown. And this is, you know, we can talk about this because maybe this happened due to there being one less skater on the ice for both teams, but North Dakota comes in on a 2-on-3. So, like, Brian called it whatever the opposite of an odd man rush is. And that's kind of correct.
Even
so Michigan
man rush.
Well, even would be 3-on-3 or 2-on-2. This was like a 2-on-3.
Yeah, reverse,
so,
odd,
reverse
man
odd man rush. There we go. I refuse to track those, by the way. So North Dakota comes in on with two guys, and they kind of like scissor and cross, and the puck is sort of dropped to the guy going to the boards, and then the guy on the boards comes towards the center. And somehow, like, all three guys, like, Edwards is kind of chasing the play, chases the puck. Warren stays with his guy, and then Shifsky is also there, and everybody just kind of, instead of anyone going back to the center of the ice. Looks like it probably should be Edwards in that situation. Maybe Shifsky. It's hard to blame a forward in that situation, but for having, you know, slot responsibilities. So they all go with a guy on the boards on the cross, and the puck, the pass gets through, and then you just have a wide open shot for Hunter Johannes, and he scores. Don't really blame Barcheski there. I mean, you know, if he makes a save, great, but like, it just, those kinds of breakdowns are the ones that we were worried about coming into this series, and it happens like in the first period, and you're just like, oh no, not this again.
The first little bit was real bad. Not just that goal, but then when Michigan was on the power play, they gave up that really bad
chance to hit the iron.
Chance to hit the iron that Barcheski had very little opportunity to try and save. I mean, they got away with it. Those, that first little bit of that game was pretty bad. They were just barely hanging in there.
Yeah.
And were lucky to come out of it only down 1-0. Just really poor breakdowns defending the rush. Just didn't have any traction in the offensive zone at all. It was pretty rough.
And then do you have anything on that goal? Like, is that just a miss from Edwards more than anything?
Yeah, I mean, just a rush defense breakdown.
Yeah. So it's 1-0 North Dakota. They get their power play. I don't even think they get an attempt on net. Like, I was looking at, and I don't think that they did anything. Michigan, you know, it was only like a minute or something, a little over that. But so, and then that was it. And you know, for any sort of power play time, I thought Michigan played better as the period went on. I thought they probably overpassed a little bit. Like, they'd get into the zone, and one of our keys was just like, look, this goalie for North Dakota person hasn't really played in a while, and he doesn't have the greatest numbers. Like, just make him make saves, and, you know, you'll probably get something through. And it looked like Michigan was just trying to set up for a pretty goal, or, you know, sort of a, like a elite passing goal, like just creating open nets instead of just being like, well, let's see if this guy can just save anything.
Yeah, you got to put pucks on net, got to start to at least put some pressure on the defense, try and cycle and get something going. And it just took them a little too long to get going in this game.
Yeah, it took them too long to really get to that level. It took them too long to really create a whole lot. And then they started creating it, and it wasn't really shots. It was more, because I think they only had like 4 shots in the period, and, you know, they probably had more opportunities and chances than that. They just couldn't really break down the North Dakota defense. So 1-0 after one, not feeling great, feeling better than during the opening minutes. But, and then I think that's when Casey left the ice, was late in the first.
Yeah. I was going to go back at some point and try and figure out what happened there.
And, like, what his last shift was and everything.
Yeah, someone was saying he took a big hit from one of those North Dakota guys.
Those massive guys.
Yeah, like a 25-year-old that just crunched him or something. Yeah. People were speculating it might have been concussion just from the hard hit. I don't know exactly.
Yeah, I mean, that's impossible.
It was not a situation where we were like, uh-oh, he's really injured. It was a situation where we were like, has anyone seen him in a while?
Right. Yeah, because he wasn't like laying on the ice,
no,
and they had to drag him off.
No.
It was like, okay, well, he went back to the bench, and then I started noticing in the second period at some point, I was like, well, wait a minute.
Someone eventually was like, where has he been? And then I honestly hadn't really noticed it that much, and then...
Well, and we started seeing a lot of Luca and Holtz.
And then Michigan tweeted sometime, I think, in the third, saying that he wasn't coming back.
Yeah. So, down a goal... and then, you know, in the second period, I thought Michigan did a little bit better. They tie the game just by getting a puck to the net, kind of like what we were talking about, where Holtz fires from straight away. The puck hits a Estapa and doesn't get all the way through, I don't think, to person in goal. Kicks out to the side as Nazer's coming around the net, finds the rebound and throws it in. And that's just kind of what happens when you get pucks to the net. You don't always have to create a rebound, but it has to hit something, and you give yourself the opportunity of, if you get a fortunate bounce, a little bit of puck luck, that if it finds a stick or a guy, you have a good look. Because North Dakota was doing a good job in zone of keeping their sticks in passing lanes and shutting down what Michigan was trying to do on the cycle, and not allowing Michigan to hold the zone for very long. So when you shoot like that, sometimes you just get random bounces that get people out of position because of where the puck is then.
Good old puck luck on this one. Just nice little bounce, and Nice play by Nazer, just coming around the net, and it looks really easy because the net's pretty open, but from the angle he's at, it's not necessarily the easiest because he's like almost at the goal line, and he's turning around and just kind of swings it into the net.
So. He's had a couple of those like sharp angle finishes this year, and this was kind of par for the course in that situation. And then sort of the puck luck bounces the other direction as, you know, Michigan can't get it clear. I think it was either Duke and Pletsky in the corner. It was tough to see who actually had the puck the last, but they're trying to get the puck out. And of course, of all people, Keaton Pearson grabs it right along the boards near the blue line, drops it, fires it at the net. And Jackson Blake, the guy that we discussed at length last week, gets his stick out and gets a phenomenal redirect, somehow getting his stick on it, directing it down, and Barcheski, I mean, had no chance. I mean, that's just a redirect. You you just hope the puck hits you, and it didn't. It goes in the net, and it's 2-1 North Dakota about halfway through the game. And I think the thing there is, like, you know, each team gets a nice break off some puck luck. Michigan scores to tie it, and then North Dakota takes the lead again. And the difference in the game is just, you know, that slow start and bad breakdown early on. And as the game went along up to the third period, you're kind of like, you know, they're going to have to go win this thing now. And the reason why is because kind of the same issue that they had.
That was a really good deflection, because that puck is going wide of the net, wide far side.
Yeah.
And then he manages to completely change the direction and it goes back the other way. And so I thought at the end of the second period that Michigan had been playing, I thought they played a pretty good second period. I thought they were almost a little unlucky to have been tied coming out of it, you know, in that period. One goal's 1-1 in it. But it did feel like they were finding their feet a little more and that they would have an opportunity to tie the game. But it wasn't going to be easy because North Dakota was a really good team at defending the front of their net and suppressing shots and all that kind of stuff. They were really, really good this year closing out games. So it was going to be a little bit of an uphill battle going into the third, but that they were starting to stack better stretches of play on top of each other.
Yeah, and, you know, tying back to what we were talking about earlier, I think Michigan had about 14 or 15 shots, somewhere like that, through the first two periods, and you're like, you know, you just needed more on this guy. You had to challenge him a little bit more. North Dakota didn't have too many more, but they also had the lead and were in good shape, playing good defense, protecting their goalie. And, you know, they're probably in a position that they would have taken at the end of that period. And Michigan just took them a little bit longer to get going, and they're kind of paying for it at that time. Like you said, the tide was starting to turn, but it was more like, well, but will they run out of time?
Yep.
Like, you want to be able to play two or three periods at that level, and you're at that. If you can do that, you can usually overwhelm your opponent and get more and better chances and score. Because like you said, I didn't think North Dakota had a ton of great opportunities, especially in the second period. Well, mostly after that initial charge in the beginning.
No, I mean, they weren't threatening a whole lot after those first 5 minutes. Michigan had been really good defensively.
So then starting the third, it was, you know, this is either going to be the period of the year or they're going to go home. And was the period of the year up to that point. And, you know, this starts with kind of what we were talking about. There's a puck that just gets sort of thrown at the net, and Pierce. Well, so they have a defenseman, Keaton Pearson, who used to play for Michigan, and they have a goalie. Huh?
I said, or Keaton Pearson.
Person?
We never figured that one out.
I thought it was the same as the coach.
That's what I have generally said, but that was one we went back and forth on many times over the years, and it never felt like we
should have just called him Keaton the whole time.
It's like the Brendan Brisson thing. We never figured it out.
So Keaton and Ludvig is where we'll go with now. Ludvig is the goalie. Keaton is the defenseman. So Ludvig makes a save and tries to clear the puck away and hits Keaton in the skate, and it goes in. To tie the game.
That's a pretty generous interpretation of what happened there to Ludvig.
Okay.
Just put the trapper on it. What are you doing in this play? This puck is rolling towards him, and he's like, I'm just going to kick it right to the four charging players in front of my net. I mean, I didn't understand what he was doing there. If you're going to try and clear that away from the net front, he needed to go like full stick, like put it behind the net. But there is two players, especially, but there's also two players behind that. It's Shifsky and Keaton Pearson that are charging right at the net as that puck is rolling towards him.
Yeah.
And that's just a situation where normally with a goalie, you just fall on that thing and just say, you know, I'm freezing this real quick.
Yeah.
But he tries to shove it away and shoves it right into the guy's crashing in front of him, and boom, it goes in. I was watching that, and I was like, well, what is he doing?
And that's kind of the point. It's like, this is what we wanted to make him do. Like, make him do things better than this and see if he can. And when they finally forced him to do that, it turns out he couldn't. And it ended up tying the game via old friend Keaton, however you pronounce his last name. So it's 2-2. You're feeling a little better. That's like 50 seconds into the third period. So you're like, okay, now we're back on level terms. And we've gotten sort of through that. We've evened the game out after all of that, you know, roller coastery through the first couple periods. Let's see if they can go win the game. And within about a minute and a half, they do it again. Tyler Duke does a great job of holding the puck in the zone, creates a little bit of space, throws it at the net, doesn't quite get to Ludvig. It hits a guy in front. I think it hits Garrett Shifsky, if I'm not mistaken.
Shifsky turns around and fires it on the goalie, and then it just takes, again, like just like a perfect puck luck bounce to the far side. And
where TJ Hughes is flying down the wing, grabs it, and throws it into an open net. And that's, you know, it sounds very like you're teaching six-year-olds, but it's why you take shots and you put the puck on the net, because that kind of stuff can happen.
Yep.
And, you know, to your point, in a game where a team is playing really good defense, and this is going to apply in the next game, hypothetically, that they'd win against State, is you may not beat a good defense or a good goalie just by with elite play all the time. Sometimes you need to screen him, like you've said about Augustine. Sometimes against a good defense, you just need to make everybody's angles suck because you get a different bounce.
Yep.
And that's what Michigan did. And so 2.5 minutes into the third period, you go from being like, all right, can they tie it, to, oh my gosh, can we hang on for 17 and a half minutes and make it to the regional final? And that's when, like, the play didn't stop there. And that's a big thing for Michigan, too, is it's not like, okay, you know, we took a few shots and we got the game tied and we took the lead. But they're like, okay, now we're going to control the period. We're going to shut this team down and we're going to add to it. And I believe they got the first 11 shots of the period.
Yeah, the shots, I think, were 14-1 at one point in time.
Just in the period.
Yep.
Yeah, because I have about 13:30 to go, shots were 24-17, and at the end of the second, they were 24-15. So Michigan had gotten 9 shots to that point in the period, about 6.5 minutes, and North Dakota hadn't had any. And they don't really get a shot for a while. And at about halfway through the game, it's 26-18. So you're just sort of starting to see the first half of the third period, North Dakota blows the lead, and then they can't even get the puck in on Barczewski. And a little over halfway through, Michigan adds to their lead with, you know, maybe one of the sweeter goals of the year, as Shifsky makes a really nice sort of head pass coming after he's in the zone to TJ Hughes, who he leads him with it, and Hughes just perfectly sauces the puck over to Dylan in the who finishes like right on the other side of the net where he usually is, and it's 4-2. And this was a Michigan goal. Like, yep. The first couple of goals, you know, they're not used to sort of grinding out, trying to get garbagey stuff as much. They're used to skating, passing, and just dicing you up, and this is exactly that.
Yeah, this was just a classic high skill play. Great passing, and then a nice shot from Duke to finish it off over the goalie, and now you're up 2 goals with 8 minutes to go. You've been totally throttling this team the whole time, and now it was like, okay, time to finish this game off.
Lock it down and let's move on. And they don't quite do that because of good old friend Keaton, last name, who we have talked about throughout the year as saying, you know, as Michigan's in-zone defense has struggled at times, we'd wondered, hey, what's he doing? We could have used him back because he was always sort of a stay-at-home guy who would kind of protect the front of the net, never really did much offensively, looked very flashy, and, you know, that's sort of what Michigan was missing. Well, this might have been his best offensive play of his career. I don't remember him ever doing anything similar like this when he was at Michigan. But he takes the puck and just sort of a la Makar Hughes, just goes around the net, keeps skating, 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 back around into the slot, fires a chance, forces a save from Barchesky. The puck kicks out right to Jackson Coons, who just, he fills an empty rebound in there too. And I think Barchesky might have gotten over a little bit, but like, you know, that's just a really good play from Keaton, just circling the net, becoming very offensive, and creating a goal that way.
Yeah, this was just really nice play. I thought Michigan, this was not a good shift from them. They were
defensively.
They were just really sluggish. I mean, the all five players are kind of huddled around the slot, and Keaton Pearson's able to have a lot of room to zoom around and then snap this shot. And it just they were on their heels for about a minute leading up to this, couple shifts in a row, and it just kind of felt like something bad was going to happen if they couldn't turn the tide.
Well, and it would be Keaton Pearson person, because that's just, I mean, that was what I wrote in the preview, is like, he'll probably score the overtime winner because he has one goal all year. Instead, he got two assists for North Dakota and ended up scoring a goal for Michigan. So for his unofficial first three-point game of his career, I think.
Yeah, some people didn't like Barchesky on this one. You know, when the puck comes to the far side,
yeah,
he's kind of over and it sneaks between his like elbow and side. This was probably the worst goal he gave up all weekend. It still wasn't anything particularly like horrible.
Horrendous, yeah.
Yeah, but he did have a pretty legitimate chance on it, I will say that.
So it's 4-3, and then they go empty late in the game, and Barchesky has to make a couple of saves, probably the biggest saves that he's made in a while, or like more dangerous saves that he's had to make in a while, because, you know, North Dakota ramps up the pressure. That's how they get that third goal. And then it's just sort of hang on time for the last few minutes. And he does. He makes a really good save as the puck jumbles through about two or three guys, ends up on a Fighting Sioux stick, and he flips it up and Parcheski's glove is right there, and at that point you're like, okay, I think maybe it might be our turn, and we might have this. And I thought it was really key that he played really well down the stretch, and that the defense held strong, because those are things that, like, for the majority of the year, you just see Michigan dominates games and they give them away in the third. And, you know, there's been a lot more instances of that lately where they've had to hold on at the end, and they've done a pretty good job.
Yeah, a little frantic final minute, but Barchesky made a couple big saves. Tyler Duke also had a great shot block where the puck came to the side, and he just throws his body in front of it and eats.
You shouted him out in your piece
just
yesterday.
A big wind up right to the like chest. I mean, that's what you want to see. Guys putting their body on the line. Barchesky made a couple big saves, and that's what sometimes it takes to finish these kinds of games off. You need every little last bit of energy, and you need your goalie to really deliver in those kinds of moments, and he did.
Well, and that's why they say, like, in the playoffs, that teams actually play defense and block shots. Like, that's kind of the mantra, and that's kind of, like you said, that's what Michigan needed to do, and they did, and it worked, and they beat North Dakota, and that's not something we get to say a whole lot. I mean, you know, they won that big game in 2011, one of the major upsets of, you know, Michigan hockey history. But other than that, I think the last time they had beaten North Dakota was back in 1998. And that might have even been at Yost. So
it was something I had never gotten to say because they never played North Dakota since I've been following the team.
They played them in the tournament in 16.
Yep.
And North Dakota was a much better team and outlasted that CCM line team. And then they, you know, Michigan got run out of the building a couple times in, I think, Fargo or Grand Forks, North Dakota, back in like 06 and 07. But this was, it felt like, okay, there's still a lot at play because you have a regional final, but this was like an accomplishment in and of itself that needed to be appreciated and celebrated. Is, you know, when you beat North Dakota in a tournament, that's not something that happens a lot, and you need to give it its due.
Sure.
Is there anything you wanted to say about the State Western game before we move on to the regional final in the next segment?
Well, two things. First of all, do you want to talk about the fire Brad Berry situation?
What are you talking about?
Clicked on any, because I follow the North Dakota guy, that like Brad Elliott Schlossman guy who covers them.
Oh, like their beat guy?
The Grand Forks Herald. And then if you clicked on like the North Dakota hockey, like final score and stuff, like
okay.
This was a meltdown for North Dakota like hockey fans. They were furious about this game.
About this game about or the way the season ended?
This game in particular, but they were all just like, they want the coach fired, Brad Berry. They want him gone. And
why? Are they Ohio State fans?
Kind of. I mean, they haven't made the Frozen Four since 2016.
Okay.
And so it's basically become like, this guy, he's a bum. He won with Hackstall's players, but since he became the real coach with his players, they haven't made a Frozen Four. They've won one tournament game, blah, 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 blah.
Well, haven't they done well in the NCHC?
They've done really well in the NCHC.
Okay.
But they haven't done as well in the tournament. So it seems that in one of college hockey's largest fan bases, this coach has garnered the tournament choker reputation.
Is that a thing?
No, I don't really think so. I mean, I cover this briefly in my piece, but
yeah.
He's finished first or tied for first in the NCHC four of the past five seasons, which...
You know what Michigan hasn't done? That. You know the last time they did that? Like 2012.
A long time ago, yeah.
So it's been 12 years. So should we have fired everyone?
Michigan, North Dakota are kind of inverses, I guess.
I guess.
North Dakota does really well in the regular season, and then every year they just get, you know, somewhat unlucky in this extremely random tournament. And Michigan every year is kind of bad in the first half, then very good in the second half. It's not enough to win in the regular season, but then they just start ripping off games in the playoffs. I don't know what any of that really means, but I would personally not fire the coach who's consistently winning the toughest conference in college hockey.
I mean, I would agree with that.
But these are NoDak fans. They made the Frozen Four three straight years twice since it's expanded to 16 teams. That's the only program that's done to that two separate times.
I mean, that's pretty good. 05. Didn't they win a title in 16 too?
They did, and they made the Frozen Four in, I think, 14, 15, 16, and they made it 05, 06, 07, 08. So the point is, this is a fan base that generally was accustomed to getting to travel to the Frozen Four quite frequently,
yeah,
and are very cranky that that has not happened
in
multiple presidencies now.
I understand that, and I don't disagree with feeling frustrated with that, because, you know, there is a level of, hey, we're one of the best teams in college hockey. We should at least make one Frozen Four every cycle or whatever. Like, yeah, that there's something to be said for that. But that's why you and I always say that this tournament sucks.
Yeah.
And the format is awful.
Yeah.
And if you want to like have a real playoffs, you should change it and give more power to teams that have earned it. And that's, you know, that's probably my guess is what North Dakota fans are feeling. But, you know, you get emotional and you say things like that because it's frustrating. And then you hopefully calm down and you don't fire a guy that keeps hanging conference banners. I mean, I don't know. I would like it if Michigan would win one of those. That would be great. But I don't know. Sometimes it's just there are competing goals and it works out and sometimes it doesn't, I suppose.
Yeah, the other thing is the Michigan State Western game. That was a wild game. High event game. That first period, I think, ended 1-0 Western. It felt like there could have been five.
No, State scored first.
No, Western scored first. Then MSU went up 2-1.
You're right.
But it ended 1-0, and it felt like there could have been five goals in that first period. There was a lot going on, and you were just kind of like, well, there's going to be a lot more goals scored in this game. And then State went up 2-1 in the second, and I was sort of like, well, okay.
They're probably going to pull away.
Maybe they're going to get control of this. And then Western scored three in like 8 minutes. A couple, they had a two-point shot goals. They had one that bounced in on the power play, and they had one other goal in there, too. And they're up 4-2, and they killed off that MSU power play to end the second period. And it was kind of like, wow, Western is in really good control of this. And then the third period, they're all over MSU for the first eight and a half minutes. And then MSU's first shot of the period goes in.
Yeah. And how very team of destiny.
It's kind of like, wow, this is the way it is. But then I thought Western did a pretty good job over those next about 9 or so minutes.
Yeah.
MSU didn't get a ton of good looks, and like the one they did, Cameron Rowe was able to keep it clean, and then MSU pulls the goalie. Western had kind of like one look on it, and it went wide. It wasn't a great look, but they were close, and then I don't know how that tying goal happens. How do you give
Levchinov gets down the boards, right, and creates it?
Right. I mean, this was a great play from him, all that stuff, but how are you giving up a a rush goal in 6-on-5 with a minute to go? I mean,
Why is one guy not stapled to the slot at all times?
And then their coverage is so bad down the wing. Everybody goes to Levchinov, and he slips it to the front and taps it, and it's just like...
It's just a panic, right? I mean, because they had shut down State for a lot of the period.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, in the last minute, everybody's freaking out. You 6-on-5 is slightly different coverages, and you have, you know, an open net that you're like, if we can just get it, it's over. And like, you know, you just, it's hard to, there's a mental aspect to a lot of this stuff that, you know, isn't attributed through numbers. And it's just hard to, these things happen because the lights get a little bit brighter at times.
Yeah, and then overtime was pretty.
I mean, did you think that Western was going to win once it went to overtime?
Generally not. I don't tend to expect those kinds of things. You know, we often think that when a team blows a late lead that they're just going to fold up or whatever, but...
Well, you and I talked about at the end of the...
There's the famous genre of these, as people always refer to it, as the Zalapukin, when the Devils tied the 1994 Eastern Conference Finals Game 7 with like 15 seconds left.
Yeah.
And then the Rangers still won in overtime on Stefan Matteau's goal, and so no one... You know, it's also a Zach Parise in the gold medal game between U.S. and Canada. There's a whole genre of dramatic game-tying goals, 6-on-5, that didn't matter because the team that was leading won anyway.
Yeah.
So it does happen. That's the point. But
this felt different because it felt like State was the... Like, they're the one seed. They're the team you sort of expected to win.
Yeah, yeah. And also just, like, MSU had been getting all the bounces. So then it was just kind of...
Waiting for the next one.
Unsurprising. That ultimately, and as the way it usually goes, is it's just kind of garbage.
Yeah.
Just thrown at the net, weird bounce goes in.
Welcome to overtime.
We have some breaking news.
We're not recording. Well, we are, but okay.
We can put it at the end, but Jimmy Snuggerud back to Minnesota.
What?
He has been sufficiently NIL'd.
Is that what it says?
That's what the Gopher
people... He's a first... Well, I mean, I guess the Blues are like...
That's what the Gopher people are bragging about on the internet. It's good for college hockey.
It's good for college hockey. I kind of wonder, like, this just seems to happen in Minnesota, where they just get all their players for, like, 3 and 4 years.
Well, I think they have a pretty good NIL program, would be my guess.
Well, maybe Michigan should.
I mean, part of it is that when your football team is ass and your basketball team is ass, then you can spend all the NIL money on
hockey.
Well,
that's... One of those is true for Michigan.
No, except Dusty is working like crazy to get the NIL, is what it sounds like. So,
well, if Juwan wasn't, maybe that's why he's...
It sounded like he wasn't, from what I could tell. He was complaining that he wasn't getting any, but he wasn't, you know, bowing down and kissing the donors. And
if you were a donor, would you want to be kissed?
probably not.
Stay away from me.
Ballas had the update that Dusty showed up to work last week at 4:30 in the morning one day.
I mean...
Because he couldn't sleep.
Somebody get him some melatonin.
All I can say is that he sounds like a real grind set guy.
Well...
Every minute that he's awake, he is working to be good at coaching basketball.
I mean, that's good, right?
It's not bad. Unless, you know, it induces burnout, but...
Well, he's 47.
Yeah.
It's relatively young. You still got a few years before.
He loves ball. What can you say?
I can't believe I'm doing this. If you find yourself in the penalty box, you want a Michigan man arguing your case, call criminal law attorney and former prosecutor Jonathan Paul tonight. It's 248 and 924 9458. Or visit his old website at MichiganLawGrad.com.
We'll be right back.
going into Sunday's Easter dinner showdown. This was arguably maybe the biggest Michigan State, Michigan hockey game in rivalry history.
Sure.
Sure.
I don't know the history of the rivalry well enough, but...
Well, they've never played in the tournament.
They've never played in the tournament, so that seems like a fair estimation.
I mean, there's probably been games, but the stakes have never been higher.
The stakes have definitely not been higher.
And both teams were, like, are legit. It wasn't, like, sort of a fluke of, like, oh, well, you know, one team is, like, barely scraping in and isn't a very good team, and the other team is, like, really good. And this was, like, a high-end matchup that didn't have, like, a heavy favorite.
Yep.
And, you know, we've seen that in basketball a number of times. Not necessarily, I don't know if Michigan State have ever played in the NCAA tournament. That is not in my
basketball
fandom, yeah, that I know
I
of.
I would doubt it.
Yeah.
But
it's certainly
pretty
possible.
Hard to play someone.
I mean, it could have been years ago.
Yeah,
right?
Like it has to happen late, you know.
And in football, they've never played in the postseason in any way. But although football games are just sort of different. They're all like an entity.
It'd be surprising if they played in a bowl game, but...
Well, I mean, or even like a conference title game.
They
like,
definitely haven't done that.
Yeah. I mean, we know that. So this is like...
That I will say that there were a couple of basketball matchups. They played the Big Ten championship game in 2019.
Yeah.
That one felt big.
That was really big.
Yeah. That one sucked because Michigan led like the whole game until the last 3 minutes.
That was the Simpson against Cassius Winston game.
Well, there were a lot of those.
Well, but the
Michigan had
but
beaten
that was
them.
The
we played them in the semifinals the previous year, and Michigan beat them.
Yeah.
And then that year, MSU had beaten Michigan twice, including in Breslin to win the regular season crown.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, now this is our chance for revenge, and they led the whole way, and then
yep,
unraveled. So there was this, you know, there have been some good matchups, but this one felt this was as big as it gets.
So the first thing was. Like it when so the trek to the rink in this time went a lot smoother because we took the north route and went around well fewer hillsides and grass tumblings. There was still one, but it went a lot better. Anyway, the first thing, you know, we enter the arena and I just go like I don't even put my bag down. It's just like booking it up to the media room and looking at the line chart and are like, you know, do I see 26? And no. And you're just kind of like, your heart just sinks because you're like, I mean, you feel for the kid because, I mean, he's been, you know, as good a player as Michigan has had all year. He's a tremendous talent, especially in college hockey in terms of, you know, just guys that we haven't really seen a lot play that way. And this is, you know, the biggest game of the season. And like, as, you know, media fans, all that kind of thing, like you want to see him play in this game.
Yep.
Like you want these are games are made on the backs of like these kinds of players that
sure.
You want to see compete.
Yep.
And of course, no Casey, and you know that's a lot of extra added responsibility for Luka and Holtz because they're both going to have to play a lot more. And you don't get Casey on the power play, which you know ended up being probably the biggest deal. But you know the positive thing I was talking to someone before the game is they're like, well, you know, Michigan just beat North Dakota without him for two periods.
Yep.
And Luka and Holtz had to play a lot in that game. So it's disappointing, but, you know, here we are and injuries happen and, you know, they'd gotten most of their guys back other than Hallam. You know, they were pretty healthy for the second half of the year. I wasn't sure what to think. Like, this felt like the North Dakota game where you're like, I mean, I could see them winning the game, but I don't think they were... You know, I didn't think that they were like a favorite.
Yeah, I didn't feel particularly great going in. I just MSU had gotten it was funny because I was messaging with Jerbear on Friday night after the North Dakota game, and I was like, yeah, I don't feel particularly great because it just feels like MSU's getting all the bounces, kind of the team of destiny right now. And then he was like, yeah, I don't feel particularly great because we've been getting all the bounces.
And that's funny.
Eventually that's going to run out. So
yeah, but when? I mean, you know, you got to win three more games. Can you keep it up for... I mean, you know what I mean?
Like, it's, yeah, but you could take it both ways, I think.
I just think that when you go into a game like that, the one thing that sort of gives you a little bit extra is knowing if you have the better goaltender.
Yep.
And, you know, I mean, that was the Lightning, right? I mean, they were good teams, but for a long stretches, they go into the playoffs, and generally speaking, when you're lining up at the national anthem and looking across at the people on the other side, you're thinking, good luck beating our guy. And all we need is a couple, and you guys are done.
Definitely gives the players a lot of confidence if they can feel that way about their goalie.
And that's the thing that just, you know, I'm not saying that Barczewski is not a good goalie, and he played really well against North Dakota, but, I mean, Trey Augustine showed up against Michigan for 3-4 games this year and played really, really well. And, you know, both teams, I think, you know, Michigan was definitely peaking, so you like that. You like where how they've been playing going into it, but I don't know. It just kind of seems to have gotten in some people's heads.
Yeah, it didn't feel particularly great going in given what we had seen, but every game is individual and you never really know.
And I was thinking going into this that Michigan would have the advantage with fewer penalties, I thought.
Yeah.
If the game was called just 5-on-5, or the game was played and called like tournament games had been that we expected.
Although Michigan had really owned the special teams battle against MSU this season.
Yeah. But without Casey, then, I mean, does that equal it out? And
Maybe.
So the funny part is this was not called like the game that we were expecting. There were Michigan ended up with 5 power plays, and I believe that State had 3, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, they had 3. So the game actually starts with a good chance for Michigan that they don't convert on, and right after that, Michigan State gets their first power play pretty soon in, and you're kind of like, okay, well, here we go. I remember, you know, and I talked to you and you'd mentioned, you know, I think Ernesty entered the zone like 2 minutes into the game and it looked like he was tripped and nothing was called. And I was like, okay, like I wasn't upset about that. I was like, this is how the game's going to be called. And then the hook they call on Brindley is like, wait, what? Like you're calling that, but you're not calling the trip?
It was definitely odd to call that.
Those are two different kinds of games right there.
Yeah, that quickly into the game.
And I thought Michigan did a pretty good job on that penalty kill for the most part. Like they got a minute to 90 seconds in and State didn't have a ton. I think Barczewski had to make kind of one save at the post. But then, you know, a shot just gets taken from up high. I believe it was Matt Bazgall that let it go. And, you know, Gavin O'Connell redirects it down and in, right at the crossbar, maybe a tick above, but it was so close.
It was
close.
Really hard to tell. I think if you said it wasn't at the crossbar, then obviously you'd say it was high. It was definitely not.
It probably wasn't low.
Oh, yeah. It was either at it or slightly above, and it was pretty hard to tell. And I felt like they just weren't going to overturn that one.
No, I think that the call on ice was going to stand, and you know, I think that I would agree with that because I you know, Brian mentioned this and we've talked about this. Like you like offensive plays. Like you don't wanna, if anything, borderline, like, you know, baseball, the tie goes to the runner. Like I'm okay with the offense sort of getting that. You don't wanna take that kind of stuff off the board unless it's obvious, in my opinion. Would you say?
Yeah, I think that's the right way to put it.
And Michigan challenges it. Would you have challenged that? Like, when they challenge it, are you like, yeah, let's do it? But because it's really early.
It's early, and I think it definitely played a factor because then there were some opportunities to challenge for majors later that they, you know, weren't going to be able to do.
Yeah, but, like, would you challenge? I mean, we'd watched a few major challenges all weekend, and, I mean, you didn't get anything. I didn't think they were going to call a major on anything.
There was a major in the BCRIT game, so.
Well, all right.
RBC Tech, but I don't know. It's early in a game. You're challenging for a goal, which is, you know, the right idea to do.
It just, when I looked at the replay,
in the second period, I think you definitely do.
Yeah, and I looked at the replay, and I'm just like, I don't think they're winning this. Like, it just doesn't seem like, even if they're right, even if mathematically, it's sort of like the, you know, like when you look, review offsides in soccer and they have the graphics that come down and the guy's like four hairs offside and you're like, oh, no, nope, yeah. Offside, you know, like that was not happening. That's not how this works. It's like you're eyeballing it. You're like, yeah, it's pretty close. We're going to count it. And it went pretty quickly, I think. So State's up on the power play 1-0. Not the start you were looking for. now you're going to have to go out and beat Augustine. And, you know, Michigan gets a power play a little bit later after an elbowing call by Nienhaus. Well, would you have looked at this as maybe, like, challenging for the major? Because, like, it looked like he hit...
That was one of several times that I thought Michigan could have challenged for a major if they had not done the early one.
Yeah. They do get a power play here. And it's actually ends up being a 4-on-3 because they were matching penalties before that. And so now you have an interesting situation without Casey. So who do they put up top on a 4-on-3? And it ends up being Brindley, which I thought was...
I was watching that and I was wondering if they had ever the entire season practiced a 4-forward, 4-on-3 power play.
I mean, if you have limited practice time, I don't know how you practice that.
I doubted that they had practiced.
I mean, it would have to be Edwards then, right? Like you're not putting Truscott up there. I mean, maybe Warren, but Warren hasn't really played a ton of power play minutes.
No, it would be Edwards that you would. Put
yeah, you'd have to. But he hadn't really played a lot of power play time either because obviously he missed the first half of the season.
Yeah.
So Brindley's up top. And they just didn't, the puck movement wasn't the same. I mean, they moved it a little, but they didn't really get, they got one good backdoor look that Augustine got over and saved, but nothing that was, you know, we'd come to see as much. The game was relatively even from there. I think, you know, about a little over halfway through the game or halfway through the first period, the shots are about 9-8 Michigan. You know, they get a chance on Augustine and from straight away that looks like it sneaks through and he just gets something on it, deflects it high. It just seemed like it was going to be one of those sort of low scoring games and they're going to have to figure out a way to, you know, move him side to side or get a screen, something that was not just going to beat him straight up.
Yeah, I thought the early power plays for Michigan were not nearly as good as the later ones. I thought they started to find traction later on, but... this one, it was kind of disappointing that they didn't really get a lot on it.
Well, in the second one, then, that overlaps the period. So at the end of the first period, it's 1-0 Michigan State. But Michigan had a minute of power play on each side of the period break. And this was the worst. This might have been their worst power play. Sans giving up a shorthanded goal. This was probably their worst power play of the season, as I don't even think they got... they got the puck in the zone, but I don't think they ever had control in the zone. And... that was just done. the next thing that I found that was interesting pretty soon after that was that Michigan State got a 3-on-2 odd man rush. And that was the first odd man rush, and I believe the only one that they gave up in the entire regional, which was kind of a big deal, I thought. I mean, that's a good way to get broken down. That's something that Michigan had struggled with at times, not just throughout the year, but over the past few years, and it probably has to do with, you know, some style of play, obviously. But they were very, very good defensively in transition all weekend.
Yeah, this one was one that you definitely kind of thought they got away with because you saw it develop and it was like, oh boy, if this, you know, if they can score here, then the game really begins to shift and it just gets fired high and wide. And then... in the grand scheme, no one will really remember it because that's how hockey goes.
Yes. So, you know, I thought Michigan did a pretty good job after that of, like, getting a couple of chances. And then they get their own 3-on-2 that ends up tying the game. A nice play in to get the puck out of the zone. And you get a rush going the other way. TJ Hughes gets it up and out, gets over to Dylan Duke on the boards, and Edwards fills in the slot. Duke hits him, and Edwards is alone and just beats Augustine on a nice transition opportunity with a pretty solid shot that just was well placed.
Edwards doing his job of reprising Casey's role, jumping up on this play, and... What I like the most about this is he didn't catch and shoot. He just wound up and snapped it real quick.
Yeah.
And didn't really give Augustine any time to get set up. And he was there. And I mean, this thing is just a missile, right? Just boom.
So it's 1-1 and you're feeling a little bit better. And then right after that, Michigan gets essentially a breakaway as it, I think it was Moldenauer who gets in to Augustine's right, forces a save. The puck comes back to the left. I think I said that Rutger missed.
No, I believe that was Rutger and it might have been Moldenauer. It was Rutger, I think, that missed on the open net.
Was it? I thought it was, and then on the replay, it looked like it was Brindley.
I believe it was Rutger. Maybe I can pull this up.
But the puck comes across after that chance, sits on the opposite side as, you know, a good play by Augustine to shut down the central breakaway, and then it looked like it was Rutger real lot in real time, and he just, I mean, the puck is there. There's a guy that's behind him, but he has a chance to get his stick on it, and the net is open, and he just whiffs, and that's the chance where you're like, if they lose this game, like, that's the one where you're like, man, that changes everything if that goes in.
Yeah, it was just sitting there, and they just couldn't.
Well, and it wasn't a game of, like, a ton of high-danger chances.
Nope.
And so this was like, you finally got, you tied the game, and here's your chance for the lead, sort of like what happened against North Dakota, and you just, it's right there.
Yep.
And, you know, sometimes that happens. Michigan does get another power play after that. So, I mean, now we're starting, the calls are starting to add up, something that I, again, wasn't expecting this game to be called this way. And this time they have Edwards in it at the top. It seems like this was a 5-on-4. So
I just pulled it up. The shot was taken by Rutger. The whiff was by Brindley.
Okay. Yeah. So it wasn't even Moldenauer.
No.
Oh. Well, I guess I was just seeing nines, apparently. So they get their power play, and they have one really good chance. I've seen them convert on this a couple of times this year where they go boards, low slot. You talk about this is like
they
a good changeup.
I love that play.
Yep. And Augustine just makes a really good save. That's about all they got. The power play just was not the, it's just not the same without Casey. He makes a 5-on-4 sometimes into a 5-on-3 by making a guy miss, getting people out of position, creating open spaces, and they just didn't really have that for the most part.
Yeah, it was a bit of a slog, but at the very least they did get one look on that power play, which was an upgrade on the previous couple.
Yep. So about halfway through, a little after halfway through the game, it's shots are 19-14 Michigan. So they're kind of taking control in terms of like creating chances. But Augustine to this point is living up to his billing, and you're just like, you know, they're going to need either something special or, you know, like you talk about a screen, a nice bounce, something like that, because, you know, it's probably going to be a pretty tight game down to the end and always tough to go against a really good goaltender like that.
Yeah, I thought Michigan had the control of the game through the first 15 minutes of the second period, and then I thought MSU closed the period really strong. They got that power play.
Yep.
And that really, they didn't score on it, but Barczewski was forced to make a couple really big saves, and then they built off that, and they really took the momentum from that to tilt the ice those last few minutes at 5-on-5, and then it kind of felt like, okay, this is good to get into the locker room and settle this back down.
So one thing I wanted to ask you about, because I didn't really see this a ton, but Luka made a really nice zone exit, missing the guy that was supposed to either check him or take the puck away, and he gets out, and it looks like it's going to be a 3-on-2, and Michigan has their two wingers and the two defensemen for State, and Luka comes in and just, from basically the neutral zone, just fires the puck deep.
That was on a penalty kill, right?
I thought it was not on a penalty kill. I thought it was still.
Or was it on 5-on-5?
I thought it was 5-on-5. Now, maybe he was trying to, like, bank pass off the end boards to a guy, you know, to the winger on the side.
The one thought I had in that was it's a period of long change.
Yeah.
And I don't think at the end of the world, it's the end of the world if you're being a little more conservative in the period of long change.
Okay.
You just want to chip and get fresh bodies out there.
I just hadn't seen, because it was clear that it was going to be a 3-on-2 because he makes the guy
Michigan
miss.
Michigan generally likes to attack off the rush.
Right.
And that's what they prioritize. It was definitely a little odd in that way. But again, I'm not going to go screaming because of...
Yeah.
Just get fresh bodies out there. It's a... These are tight, tight checking games. This one was pretty low scoring. Not the end of the world, to be a little more conservative.
So for the second period break in a row, Michigan gets to wrap a penalty or power play as Levshinov takes a call, an after the whistle call that I think they baited him into.
I thought this was a bit of a dive from Warren, personally.
a KG veteran move?
Yeah, it's Levshinov has to be smarter because he's the one that comes in from afar and joins the fray after it's already been set up. And at the end of the day, if you come in and join and then a guy ends up knocked over and hits the ref as he's getting knocked over, you're just going to get called in that situation. But Warren, I thought, went down pretty easily there, and Michigan got a call out of it.
Yeah, so they get some power play time at the beginning of the, or the end of the second. Dylan Duke gets a couple of chances in tight, nothing that was like screamingly wide open or anything like that, but he had a couple good looks, and Augustine made the saves, and then he had another chance that went just wide at the start of the third. You know, I was after two, I was kind of sitting there talking to somebody, and you know, I felt good in terms of the game. I thought, like you said, Michigan played, for the most part, outplayed them in the period. At the end, it kind of got a little bit loose. But you're also coming off of, you know, a really good third period, and you hope that the team recognizes that and is like, hey, we just did this, and there's a lot at stake here, and we need to come out and have the third period of the year.
I wasn't feeling great, personally.
No?
Again, it just was like, Augustine had played really well up to that point, and it just kind of was like, I don't know, it was sort of like, this has the feel of we're going to...
The team of destiny.
Yeah,
just
it just
gonna...
feels like we're going to put 45 shots on Augustine and he'll save 44 of them, and then MSU will score on a, you know, quadruple deflection, and then that's just kind of the way it's gone recently.
Yeah.
And again, the way it was kind of to some degree going up to that point, just because he'd been really sharp, and
yep.
It was kind of like, what are we going to do to break this guy down? And
yep. So, you know, like I said, they just come off their best third period of the year. They were going to need another repeat performance, and essentially that's what they got, and maybe even upped it. State had a chance early that, you know, forced Barzo into a really nice shoulder save. It was a kind of a tough chance that he kind of shoveled to the side. And then we get sort of the one of the bigger, I don't know, highlights for the defenseman, I thought. You know, we'd kind of bagged a little bit on Warren and Truscott all year as they'd sort of struggled to play together. They struggled in their own zone at times. They'd, you know, neither one had done a ton offensively. And, you know, like, all right, if you're not going to do a ton offensively, you got to be great in your own zone. They weren't always. And, you know, to see them be able to connect on this goal was, it was sort of cathartic in a lot of ways. Shifsky makes a really nice play on the boards to get the puck up to Truscott. Truscott from, I thought it was more in the center, but he was actually over closer to the left point. Spots Warren cheating down on the right side, hits him below the dot. Warren collects and beats Augustine to the post. And it was just a really cool moment to see Truscott and Warren connect on that particular goal.
The unsung hero of this play is the screen in front by Dylan Duke, because it, when Truscott's up high doing his little give and go with Shipsky, Augustine is trying to get around the screen and trying to see what's going on, and that leaves him like a half second late to recognize the pass. And
he's so, coming on the diagonal?
Right, and so this goes in on the far post, and it's only able to go in. It's low along the ice. It's only able to go in because Augustine's not over in time, and he's not quite over because he's just a little late tracking it because of the screen. And Truscott sets up, and I mean, with Warren especially, I've been praising his off-puck reads for a little while.
Yeah.
In the offensive zone. It seems like the last few weeks, every game or two, he's got one moment where he makes a little cut. I mean, I don't remember which game it was. Maybe it was the MSU game. Obviously, he scored in that one the previous week, but he also had a chance one of those weeks reeling tight as well, where he kind of like cut to the slot and shot it into the goalie's chest. But he's just been kind of sliding down a little bit, rotating around, looking to get himself open and get in opportunities. And he does that here. And he got them the goal, and it felt like, okay, this is what we needed.
He's been really good for probably a month, 6 weeks, somewhere yeah. that stretch. And I think that has been a lot of the resurgence of Michigan's team defense.
He still has his occasional issues against the rush just because he's not really super fast. But everything in zone's been really good, and again, his movement in the offensive zone has been really good. So it's just been very nice to see.
Yes, I agree. He's you know, we kind of both wrote this, but he's kind of becoming the player that Michigan hoped and thought they were getting all year. And you start to do that, and your defense starts to get deeper and deeper, and people start to stack shifts and pairings on top of each other in terms of getting good play, and you're like, yeah, this team is getting
and he's
pretty good.
To me, has earned the ever valuable gamer label that I sometimes give out.
Is that ever valuable?
Yeah. That's why they play hockey, to get that label.
I was the Alex Drain gamer of the week.
But when you score a late goal to finish off a really pivotal sweep against Notre Dame, and then you score in a Big Ten championship game, and then you score again in the third period of a regional final, then...
I mean, there are different theories on clutch, but whatever they are, Marshall Warren has certainly been that as of late. I didn't quite feel like the game was over.
No, 13 minutes is a lot of time against a high-scoring team.
Yeah, and we just seen Michigan a lot. They've had some bobbles. State is just that kind of team that just seems to eke this stuff out. We just watched them pull one out against Western and weren't even sure how that happened, but they did. And so you just, you know, from a field standpoint, you're like, well, I'm glad we're in the lead, but, you know, we'll see. And, you know, then we got to talk about it, because I actually thought this guy played pretty well all weekend and just had probably the worst play, one of the worst plays of his season. Philippe Lapointe takes a boarding call in the offensive zone with, you know, roughly, you know, 10-ish minutes to go. And, you know, there's just, you can't take that penalty. Like, that particular penalty in that particular part of the ice, he's probably just finishing a check, you know, wanting to make a hit. But the one thing that could jumpstart Michigan State in this third period is getting a power play. And that's what it was. And it's just, it was frustrating because, you know, he's a guy, he's a senior, he's been around. We've watched him for 4 years. He's wearing a letter. And like, You just wanted a little bit better in that situation.
Physicality from Michigan's side was starting to ramp up a little bit in that minute preceding it. And the forecheck shifts, they were really coming in hard and finishing checks. And when you do that, sometimes you can get carried away.
Yep.
And this was carried away. It was really, really dumb. And it put Michigan in a tough position. But I thought the first minute of the power play for Michigan State, Michigan did a pretty good job.
Yeah, no,
they were hanging in there all right, got some clears. Barczewski made a save or two, and then it just went awry.
Well, and it was right off a faceoff.
Yep.
So, you know, it was similar to that first penalty kill where everything was great until it wasn't. And for whatever reason, you know, you mentioned this, I think I was reading in your piece earlier about you don't really like it when two defensemen go to the boards.
Not ideal, just because then those guys are all in one spot. And if you lose that board battle, then you're in a pretty precarious situation.
So when you watch this, it looks like, if you don't know who the players are in terms of like what position they play, it looks like this is definitely Onestapa, because he's the last guy that bails on sort of the slot in the backside. But if what you're talking
about, it's
definitely
Onestapa. I mean, it's.
But would it be on a defenseman for if one defenseman sees the other go in the corner, like, hey, that's not your play, that's someone else's play? Not necessarily.
I mean, I don't enjoy two defensemen in the corner, but it's a thing that happens sometimes.
Okay.
And it is the way it goes. It just is.
But if you're a stopper, you can't leave.
If you're a center, play in the slot.
Especially if you can see all of your teammates on the boards.
In general, that's where you play. If your two defensemen are in the corner especially, you have to cover the front of the net. That's your job.
Yeah.
You're not a winger. Like, if you want to just skate up and down the wall, then play wing. But you're the center on this play.
Yeah.
And Brindley is already covering the wing. He's up the wall, shaded exactly where he's supposed to be.
And the funny part is the stop has been a great penalty killer all year. And he blocks shots, that sticks in the neutral zone, or in the passing lanes, always has been really good in this. And it seems like he kind of figures it out, because he kind of goes over there and then sort of freaks out and is like, oh no, and that's when sort of the pass comes through.
It's just really unclear what he's even doing here.
Yeah. It felt a little panicky, maybe a little bit like, oh, I gotta go get the puck, and you know, and then he, instead of just sitting tight and watching the backside, and so the pass gets through to Larson in the slot, and he's alone, and he beats Barczewski, and yeah, you know, like a save, but like in that situation, you're just like
really similar to the Edwards goal in that you have the goalie kind of getting ready to be set in position, the puck's rolling over, they're ready, but again, my favorite thing, just a big wind up, just clapper, boom, back of the net.
Yep.
And I mean, I much prefer that to you know, a catch and shoot or trying to bait the goalie or anything.
And especially from close, because you have such a big angle to shoot at the net. Like, yeah, you could miss for sure, but I mean, the thing that a goalie is going to be scared of in that situation is going to be if it's just by him before he realizes it. And
yep,
that's what happened. And it's 2-2, and at that point, you're just like, no, not again. Like, we just can't pull away from these guys. And, you know, of all the times, you know, regional final and all of that, and you kind of played well enough, and just in the end, you just take a dumb penalty, and then you make a dumb play on the penalty kill, and it's just like, oh, this is going to be gut-wrenching ending. But it wasn't, because the guy who won regional player, most outstanding player, you know, they have these different names for all these things. He was MVP of the tournament, I mean, whatever you want to call that. Ends up with 4 goals. You give him basically a lot of the credit, the unsung hero, on the Warren goal. Dylan Duke, who's not taller than you and was slid down the draft boards. It's a game with first-round picks galore, and the 4th rounder, who's probably coming back next year, is the best player on the ice. And he just picks up the puck, flies through the neutral zone, gets to the boards. I was sitting in that end, so he's kind of coming at me because he's coming sort of towards the corner, and I'm sitting there watching me like, I mean, he's going to have to just fling it at the net. Hopefully there's someone crashing because he's going to run out of space. Just turns the defenseman, gets around, separates out back into the slot so he doesn't kill the goalie, and just beats Augustine to the far post, gets around his skate, and gives Michigan the lead back. Like, within 2 minutes of, you know, the power play goal, and Michigan's back on top, and you're just like, this guy should be wearing a cape.
He's worked on his skating a lot last 2 summers, is what helps make this play possible. He's gotten a lot quicker than he used to be with his foot speed. Also, just a real bad look for Matt Pascal, the defenseman who's on that far side that Duke swings down around, because boy, he looks like he's in quicksand. Just not moving his feet at all. Gets turned around and is just gone. I mean, he looks like a turnstile on this one. And then really the most impressive part is how Duke is able to swoop around Augustine, and there's 3 Spartans right there, and they're all trying to poke check him. And the fact he's able to keep possession of it and then tuck it in far side, it's just it's a hell of a play.
I mean, should someone just like tried to check him?
Ideally, I mean,
that's kind of what you're supposed to do in some way.
I think in a perfect world, Bazgall, you would want to just keep skating backwards and try to put a check on him rather than flipping his hips, because after he turns around, then he's just done.
Yeah. So it's 3-2, and you're just kind of like looking for a replay.
And there were some interesting potential like offside stuff. Like, it was really close at the line.
Oh yeah.
Shevsky, and they decide not to challenge, but the TV crew is giving us a tight shot of the MSU replay people.
Yeah.
The 3 of them with the laptop, and they're all like, you know,
head over trying to look at their phones
because
there are no,
trying to assess if they're going to challenge.
I would not call the scoreboard there a jumbotron. It might be like a minitron.
Yeah. Not a Megatron, but so, and then they dropped the puck and the TV.
So would you have challenged that? Like, didn't they have a timeout?
It was weird that they never challenged anything.
Yeah.
Especially as the game was getting away from them. It just felt like, why not try?
Yeah. I mean, what's the worst that happens? You can't call timeout.
Yeah. And then they dropped the puck and the camera then pans back to the action.
And Edwards finds Nazer. Nazer enters the zone on a 2-on-1 and probably completes one of the best passes I've ever seen, at least in college in Michigan hockey and in hockey that I've watched, as he brings the puck back between his legs and passes over to Brindley one time right on the tape, and he beats Augustine. It's 4-2, and the place is now bonkers, and you're just starting to dream of Minnesota.
The one thing that has to be talked about here that I haven't seen talked about that much is what in the world is going on with Michigan State on this play?
I mean, we've talked all year about how they're not the strongest at the back end, and they give up chances on the rush. They're, after Levshinov, their defensive core is not great.
No, it's really bad.
I was trying to be diplomatic, but all right.
But I distilled down this picture, and look at this right here. This is within 5 seconds of a face-off.
So you have four people that have now crossed the red line.
The fifth one is right at the red line. You got five players between the offensive blue line and the center line. Within 5 seconds of a center ice face-off.
I mean, that's sort of their MO.
In a game you're trailing by one, you got 7 minutes to go. This isn't 20 seconds left in the game. Yeah. I've watched this play, and I have no idea what the defensemen are doing. They're just aimlessly wandering up ice, and then all of a sudden it gets turned over, and they're like, uh-oh.
So we talked about...
Very strange. So
we talked about this pass in prep, and you said that he kind of needed to go between the legs.
Well, because the defenseman, the one that's able to frantically hurry back, Patrick Geary, is basically parallel. Their skates are parallel with each other. And so if he tries to swing the backhand, he's going to have to swing it basically through Geary and under his stick, and that obviously opens you up for the opportunity for Geary to knock it away. Whereas by going between the legs, it puts him behind himself, and mm-hmm. thus the puck is now behind Geary, and there is a tiny window between Geary and the back-checking Spartan right behind him. And so Nazar does see the little window that is needed to get that pass across, in which if you hit it, there is physically nothing they could do.
Yeah.
As opposed to just passing it through somebody. And then, you know, he gets it across. It's a perfect feed right in the wheelhouse. And it's one of those plays where you have to really adjust for the sort of situation, I think, in my mind. Because I've seen a lot of great plays over the years, seen a lot of great passes, seen a lot of players go between the legs, do mm-hmm. crazy stuff. The level of skill in the NHL in particular is higher than it's ever been before. You see players like Dakota Joshua, who...
It's not the
was
most
a rather
skilled.
Anonymous, you know, just kind of a guy in Big Ten hockey. Good player, but wasn't.
Well, we've seen Kent Johnson.
Wasn't a wizard. And Dakota Joshua on Sunday, the very same day as this Michigan State game, goes like between the legs and dekes out a goalie and scores a goal, you know, in tight. Right? And like guys like that are doing that. Like
yeah.
players that were close to career AHLers are no dude.
Everybody's doing the Michigan.
Everyone's doing that now. Like there's so much skill. There's so many cool stuff. But there's a big difference between going between the legs and shooting it in the net against Anaheim in the like second period of mm-hmm. a game in late March and pulling this off in a 7 minutes to go in an elimination playoff game when you're up one goal.
Against your biggest rival.
So it's really really ballsy to try to do that and then to pull it off, and he's doing it at high speed with back checkers. Like this is just it's a great play. It is a phenomenal play, one of the best sort of skilled passes you'll ever see.
Well, and he has to hit Brindley in the tape because yep. what we talked about is if it's a catch and reset and shoot, you know, Augustine might get across, but he hits Brindley in the tape and the puck is gone and Augustine can't get there in time. And that's what we've talked about is like, you're going to need that kind of a play to beat him. And they got two of them in like, what is it? 12 seconds.
Yeah. 12 seconds.
So it's 4-2. And, you know, there's still, what, I think 7:06 or something left in the game. And, I mean, you know, the way that it played out, you know, Michigan had limited a lot of State's chances. And when this went in...
This one, for me, was kind of like the Hassan Haskins touchdown to go up 28-13 on Ohio State in 2021.
Yeah.
Where you're kind of like, wow, that's really cool and really good for our team. But also, uh-oh. We have to win.
We cannot lose this. If this is a meltdown, like this is of epic proportions.
This is either the worst meltdown in Chuck we've ever had, or we win. Those are the two options now.
This is the ranges just got went to the extreme. State decided to go empty at 4 minutes left. Was that early for you?
No, I mean, they're down two, and they weren't getting a ton of traction in mm-hmm. in the intervening 3 minutes after the Brindley goal, so...
Jake had to make a save in tight, and...
Plus, you're playing a team that looked really kind of bad 6-on-5 in the previous game against North Dakota. So anything that can kind of start asserting yourself.
So Barczewski had to make a save or two down the stretch.
He had one snow angel where he kind of got up a little slow. And I remember just thinking, like, is he okay? Like,
Noah West. But with a couple, 2.5 minutes to go or thereabouts, like, Mueller gets a slashing call, and it's
this is a fun penalty because
did you think it was a penalty?
Yeah, I mean you have to call.
Comes
that.
Down on
you
the
have
stick,
to call, but it's one of those ones that you have to call, but at the same time it takes a ton of guts to call it, and the reason is because by calling it you're ending the game.
The game's over.
Yep. And refs just don't want to do that. They do not want to end the game by their whistle because you have that little bit of doubt that what if I missed it, right? What if I'm pretty sure it's a penalty, but there's that little part of you that's like, if this is actually not a penalty and I just, you know, missed it and the guy's stick broke on his own or whatever, my eyes didn't see it. The stuff like that happens. And if you get it wrong, then you are the big clown of the week and all that kind of stuff. So it does take a little bit of guts, but at the end of the day, it's a clear slash. It breaks the stick.
Yep.
And MSU is going to get a rush out of it. They were going to have numbers going back the other way. And so you have to call. And I didn't see really any howling about this on the Michigan State internet. Like, this was a penalty. So.
Yep. Probably from a state perspective, you're down 2 goals. You haven't done anything. You take your chance. And if you get called for the slash and if they swallow their whistle, then you win, right? And not win, but you win that chance and you win your gamble. And, you know, they called it. And at that point I was like, all right, just eat the puck. Like, just play around.
Yep.
Don't play around, but pass around, play keep away. Don't give up anything stupid. So of course they don't. And Brindley fires from the point. Duke tips it. It goes in. It's 5-2. And I was like, well, I guess I was wrong on that one. Maybe not in theory, but like in certainly like,
I mean, I think
enjoyment factor.
It's easier said than done.
To do that?
Right, because here's the thing. We say, like, oh, just pass it around. But that's kind of assuming that a team is going to defend the penalty kill like they would normally. But they're not going to because
they can't.
Because of the time effect.
They have to sell it.
Right. So you're not just going to put 4 guys in a diamond in the slot and just let you pass it around the exterior. Like, if you watch this goal that they score, each pass they're making is, there's an MSU guy.
But do you even enter the zone? Like, why?
Well, you have to enter the zone.
Why?
Because the faceoff's in the offensive zone. You're going to start with possession in the offensive zone if you win the draw, which they did.
Okay.
So, yeah, you could fall back, but even then, if you go into the neutral zone, I mean, you're going to be passing back and forth, and they're going to be selling out, diving to break up the play.
So you just,
and the closer you get to your own net,
the worse that is.
The worse it could be if you make one bad pass.
That's true.
So
State just sort of forced a shot. Brindley took it. Duke tipped it, and
that's it.
5-2. I mean, you know, it's just kind of awesome when you think back to the year. The third period was the period that Michigan just struggled in for so long, especially in the first half of the season, and part of that was probably due to lack of depth because guys were hurt and, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, then they just hang the two best third periods of the year in back-to-back games, the biggest games against two of the best teams that they've faced all year with all the stakes on the table. And I mean, we haven't really talked about the coaching staff at all, but like the stuff that got fixed on this team in the last month or so or two, I mean, the penalty kill has been all sort of the second half of the season. The defense has been better the last, you know, month to 6 weeks since that, you know, Penn State game. And then like the third period narrative stuff about, you know, being kind of soft mentally and, you know, panicky and fading at the end, and they just grew up really fast. And I mean that's got to start with leadership.
Yeah, I think they definitely, through the coaching, were able to improve various weak spots in their team, the defensive structure in the neutral zone, their issues on the penalty kill, all those sorts of things kind of conspired to help them improve and give them the kind of blueprint they needed. And then it came down to players executing, and it hasn't all been great, and they've had to go through some choppy situations, some of them goaltending induced later in the season. And then this weekend we were kind of able to see of sort of like, well, what, you know, remember the MSU Big Ten title game, remember the 6-5 overtime win in Minnesota. Like, yeah. Imagine those games, but Barczewski is good instead of bad. And it's like, this is what it looks like.
Yeah.
They actually win the game and do it, you know, in a decently convincing manner. And so it looked for a long while in January and February like we weren't going to really get a team that figured it out, but they did a little bit later than normal. But now they're in a situation where they're going into the Frozen Four, and I think that they are very credibly one of the four best teams because...
Well, when you beat those two teams, it's hard.
The teams that were above them were Quinnipiac, Wisconsin, Minnesota. Michigan has a trump card over Minnesota. They beat them 2 out of 3 times late.
In Minneapolis.
All in Minneapolis. North Dakota, they beat them. Maine, I watched that game. You're not fooling me. and then Michigan State. So, yeah, I don't think really anyone else has an argument. They're one of the four best right now, the way they've played down the stretch. And
this is, you know, we're going to talk Frozen Four next week. That's definitely not for this podcast. But, you know, this is an insanely strong Frozen Four.
Yep.
Not just, like you mentioned about Blue Bloods and that kind of thing. There's definitely a lot of that, all of that. But the teams that are all there are all really good. And they all are there because they're really good at a lot of things. And they have a lot of really good players. And, you know... You could argue that Michigan would have the worst odds of the four to win the national title. But when you watch this team and you watch what they did, and they did all this without Seamus Casey. They played 5 of 6 periods this weekend against North Dakota and Michigan State without Seamus Casey. Played really good defense. Mostly, you know, there was a stretch here or there. But for the most part, all weekend. And that's the kind of thing that makes you think, well, they can beat BC. Will they? I mean, probably not. But... They could, and it wouldn't be the biggest upset in the world. It would probably be an upset. And the same thing if they face BU or DU or whatever. Like, this team has come together, fixed a lot of issues. Guys are stepping up. All the things that you need to have happen to make postseason runs, you're getting the most out of the depth of your roster. You're making intelligent plays for the most part. Like, all of those things are starting to fall into line, and that's what they needed to do to get to this point, and that's what makes you believe that, you know, they're not going to walk in and probably be like a sacrificial lamb. They're going to be a tough out if somebody beats them.
Sure.
So, and if they don't, you know what? This was one hell of a weekend, and two big wins that, regardless of how the season ends, say a lot about what this group has put together. Not saying that they're satisfied with it, saying that you have to look at each accomplishment in and of itself. And winning this regional was probably one of the toughest regionals that I've ever seen Michigan go in and actually execute and win. I mean, they beat 2 top 5, probably top 8 teams in the country, and did it from a troubled spot and having to do it down the stretch.
They beat an MSU team that they'd had quite a bit of trouble with, and then North Dakota was a team that had been number 3 like all year.
You know what's funny is, like,
until the final weekend.
That's the third year in a row now that Michigan has had a team that they've struggled with that they've met in the postseason of one kind or another, and they've won that last final game against that team. Notre Dame, Ohio State, and then now Michigan.
One argument is they've been decent adjustments. Another argument is it is also just really hard to
keep beating a team.
Hockey to beat a team,
yeah,
5 or 6 times in a, you know.
Is there anything you want to say about any other regionals?
Yeah, we should go through the regionals.
All right,
talk about what happened in some of those games.
Okay,
this was also, we have to do talk about one thing. You weren't exposed to this, but the ESPN thing has to be discussed.
We have to discuss the ESPN.
It was so bad.
Yeah,
and the fans are going to want discussion of this.
All
because they had to deal with this too. You had the broadcasters in this regional were not good.
Thanks, Alex.
The Rutger McGorty.
That's what he was called?
Yes, the whole weekend.
Say it again.
Rutger McGorty.
McGorty?
Yeah, the emphasis on the T.
Okay.
And it was very weird that he did that all of Friday, and then somehow no one, like, told him on Saturday, like, hey, that's, you know.
Like Eric Portillo?
Yeah, it's just, that was really weird.
Okay.
And it was very annoying.
I mean, that was probably the first Michigan game he's watched all year.
Yep, probably. But that's just another one. I'm like, just look at the name. Like, are you familiar with phonetics?
Like, well, you may have answered your own question.
And then Friday was very frustrating, the MSU Western game, because they go in, Western challenges for a major penalty, and we on the broadcast pick up some of the ref mic. Like when the ref is leaning over through that little hole to speak to the score, you know, that little,
like through the boards,
that little yeah. hole, and you can hear the ref go, reviewing for a major penalty. And then they go into the box and pull out the iPad. And then for 3 minutes, they're watching this because MSU was going to go on the power play and Western was challenging for a major penalty. And so this whole time they're watching the penalty Western committed against MSU. And they're like, so they're challenging for a high stick here to see if this is actually a high sticking penalty. And I'm like, that's not reviewable. What are you talking about? And then they're like, well, actually, it might be they're challenging for embellishment on this. I'm like, that's also not review. What? Have you been watching?
They're this? Challenging for a two-line pass.
It just was like, if you've watched any college hockey at all during this season or the last year or the year before, number one, you would know that those aren't reviewable. Number two, you would know that if they're reviewing something not related to a goal, it's a major penalty review. That's what it always is. It's not that hard to figure out. And, you know, if you're having trouble figuring out what hit they're reviewing, that's fine because it's a completely bizarre process and we don't like it, et cetera, et cetera. But how do you not know that's what they're looking at least somewhere in the play, even if you didn't hear the referee say it? So that it just felt like, have these guys watched this? Like, did they just get pulled from like a volleyball broadcast?
Bocce ball.
And then now they're having to do this sport they're not familiar with. And then they had some puck tracking camera issues.
I mean, that's part of the deal, though, is that like ESPN shows how many college hockey games a year.
So here's the thing. They show a lot of them just out east. And so my assumption is that like a lot of those crews that do those games are doing the Springfield and Providence games because those are the networks they cover. They cover the ECAC and they cover the Hockey
East.
They don't do NCHC. They don't do Big Ten.
But those games are not on like the ESPN networks. They're on like Plus.
They're on ESPN Plus, but those are better broadcasts. And
probably.
Like, some of those guys, like Colby Cohen, like those are guys that cover Hockey East. Because that was coincidentally the other complaint of the weekend, which is like the just like...
Peter was like...
Peter was using Twitter for what it's supposed to be for.
Peter's doing...
like adding big accounts and being like, shut up!
Stop being clowns. At one point, he texted me and was like, I don't really want to lose Alex, but can we get him on the ESPN broadcast? Because these guys are ridiculous.
Yeah, the blatant homerism towards BC. And
Buchagross, like, yeah. Wearing his BC jersey, yeah, like, in the booth.
But, yeah, they had a lot of issues tracking the puck. And then the first power play for MSU, the first like 45 seconds of the power play, they did the rink level view from like the corner. And
wait, can you not see from there?
You couldn't see like half the play. And we were just sitting there like, what is this angle? And it's like, this is the like, if you are Bill Rapai angle, you're a photographer in the corner, this is what you see. And it's just brutal. It's really bad. And I don't know what to say. We've come to expect it, but it feels like when you're putting this on ESPN2, you have like a decent interest in making it not so bad that viewers immediately change the channel to TNT or whatever. Like,
to watch Independence Day,
but they don't for whatever reason. So,
well, let's hit up on the other regionals to get people caught up on what happened in some of those games. We can start with the Thursday games before Michigan played. The opening game of the tournament was maybe the best game of the weekend. Massachusetts Denver.
Yep, UMass Denver. This one goes into double overtime,
and UMass almost wins multiple times. And
there were a lot of chances in that overtime, in the second overtime. A lot of good saves between Henry Davis and Michael Herbal. It really reaches its dramatic climax when in double overtime, Henry Davis is injured while UMass is on the power play. And so, first of all, you get a penalty in double overtime. So you're like, oh boy, here we go. This is a chance. UMass can pull off the upset. And then after like 10 seconds, Davis makes a save and just is like dead. And he's laying in the crease and the trainer's out there. He was down on the ice for like 2-3 minutes. And I don't think I've ever seen a goalie that was down in that shape for that long stay in the game. Like, they had the backup. He was on the ice. He was stretching. He was getting ready. And I was like, man, they're going to have to put...
How does he not have to leave?
A cold backup in the game while they're on the penalty kill in double overtime. Like, this is crazy.
How does he,
it's like, no, he's staying in. I'm like, what?
How does he not have to leave? If, like, you cause this, I mean, like, in football, if you're down and injured, you can't play the next play.
Yeah, I think there should be, yeah, there could be an argument for that. So it was crazy that he stayed in and they managed to kill the penalty. And then not too long after that, Tristan Brose scored for Denver to...
Old Gopher.
Yep, to win them the game. And they survive that one.
And then they play Cornell
who beat Maine. It was a close game, but it was a very, like, boring game.
Yeah.
I had it on, but I wasn't watching it much because, like, it just... Because
you fell asleep.
It was no action.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'll watch the NCAA basketball tournament. This is... Nothing's happening in this game. Maine was just kind of lifeless. They weren't doing anything. Cornell just had the lead, and then they got a late goal, and then it's like, okay, this one's over.
Did you watch any of Denver-Cornell regional?
Yeah, I had a little bit of that one on. That was going on at that time. Like, the first little bit of that game was overlapping with Tigers White Sox, but I saw some of the the big thing was Cornell scored first, and yeah. I was like, oh, okay,
yeah.
And then late in the first period, I think, or maybe it was in the early second, Denver scores on like a wrist shot, no screen, like way out on an entry, and I'm just like, if Cornell's vaunted goalie is giving this up, like it's not happening.
Yeah.
And but they hung in there, and Denver didn't score, I think, until on the power play late in the second period, and that put them up 2-1, and that's the way it stayed, and Cornell got some really good looks in the final 3-4 minutes, so Cornell played better than I was expecting. They might just have Denver's number a little bit, because they beat them last year in a pretty shockingly lopsided game.
Yeah.
And then this year, they easily could have won that game if their good goalie was not weirdly bad, so...
But Denver punches their ticket to the Frozen Four.
And then Denver, they look... I mean, their vaunted offense didn't score much this weekend, but their goalie, who has been really hot as of late...
Was good again.
Still really hot, so that's pretty dangerous.
Sioux Falls, BU beats RIT. It's kind of close. It was close
for a little while, and then Celebrini was like, I'm just going to go
just score some goals,
do a few no-look passes, and then it was over.
6-3 final there, and then the second game, Omaha and Minnesota, and Omaha's up 2-1 in the third?
I think in the third, or maybe it was in the second, but what was weird about that game was I thought Omaha was definitely the better team, and then they just had like three really bad turnovers, and all of them ended in Gopher goals. Like, Omaha would kind of control the run of play for a long period of time, and then they'd make like one turnover, and suddenly it was in the net. And it just kept happening to them,
yeah.
So... I wasn't too impressed by Minnesota in that game, but then their game against BU...
That finishes 6-3. There must have been...
That was a very, very crazy game. There was a lot of scoring. It was 3-3 by the halfway point of the game, and a really high event game, very frenetic. The big takeaway from this one was I saw... An account, I think it was a BU hockey account, tweeted the instat numbers from this game, and Minnesota won the expected goals battle by a lot.
Really?
And that did kind of line up with what I saw. I thought BU looked like trash in this game, honestly, but they just did close, had a nice Gopher career, all that stuff, but this was not a good game from him. He gave up a couple really bad goals, and...
See, the thing about close to me, and maybe I'm, you know, two feelings puck here, but like, and I only mostly watch, I should say, when they play Michigan, but he always has these shiny numbers, and we go through and preview them and talk about them and everything, and then I watch him play, and I'm just kind of like, eh.
It feels like there's not, like, I mean, it's hard to say for a guy that made a Frozen Four a couple times as a starter and all that stuff,
sure.
But it has felt a little bit like there wasn't a lot of dog in him, that, because Michigan would beat him in the, you know, Big Ten championship games.
Several times. They've beaten him in every major game they've played.
Yeah, Michigan is Michigan, all that stuff. But you have this frozen. You have the championship game last year where he has an iffy goal to tie
The Quinnipiac one. Yep. Yeah,
and then you have this game where they get eliminated because it just kind of feels like he was a good college hockey goaltender, but wasn't a difference maker. And then in the big moments, just didn't quite have it.
Well, it feels like if they had. They had a really good goalie. Minnesota probably wouldn't have won a national title last year and would quite possibly be in the Frozen Four this year.
Yeah, I don't think people are like rushing to sign Justin Close now that he's graduated. So it's bad. He just He was, I, all things considered, I remember when they signed JLF in the middle of that season.
Yeah.
And we looked at close, and he was this tiny little goalie from the Saskatchewan minor juniors.
Yeah.
Who hadn't played much, and when he did, he didn't have good numbers. I was like, uh-oh.
He's going to get lit up like a Christmas tree.
And he was very admirable for what
he
was expected of him. But I thought BU, honestly, they kind of reminded me of BC in a little bit, just like, it kind of just felt like they if they're not doing that much for a long while, and it's like, this team doesn't look very good, then every so often they're just like, oh, we're just going to do a Harlem Globetrotters thing, and we're just going to make several between-the-legs, no-look passes, and then it's going to be in the net.
A little like Michigan on the weekend. Turns out that's what elite talent can do for you. The final regional was in Providence, and you know, Michigan Tech hung around for a period, a little over a period, maybe, but in the third period, BC hangs four on them. And that
was an interesting game. I was watching some of that game, and the like shot attempts and shots on goal were surprisingly even, which, you know, we'll talk about this next week. But Boston College's like possession numbers and stuff aren't very good, to be honest. Like,
Well, their Corsi's like not as high as you would expect.
Yes, it's like 51.5 at even strength, which is shockingly low.
For who's on that
team? They're just running like a 107 PDO because their goaltender's 925 and they're shooting 15%.
Well.
And so that's just how it goes. But it was tied 1-1. Gabe Perreault throws a really bad elbow.
Yeah.
Really bad hit. He gets sent off and Colby Cohen is like twisting over backwards to be like, he's just a poor boy. Don't send him off.
He's just a poor boy.
And then it's like, what are you talking about? This is obviously five in a game. And so then they send him off. And then Tech has the 5-minute power play. And you're kind of sitting there thinking, if they could get two on this, go up 3-1, actually, they maybe have a chance. But they get zero. And then you just kind of knew that eventually the dam was going to break. And then they had a 5-minute major themselves later in the game. And BC scores several times and it spirals out of control. But I didn't watch that game thinking like, wow, I'm watching, you know,
a super team,
the 77 Canadians play the Seals or something like that. They would have been the Barons by then. But so then it went into the Quinnipiac matchup because Quinnipiac beat Wisconsin. That's the game I think I saw the least of because it was going on during the MSU Western game.
Yes.
And so I had it on the other screen, but I wasn't paying that close attention. Quinnipiac won in overtime.
Won in overtime because they just win in overtime.
Yep.
Until
this one. And then this game was interesting against BC. There was no scoring in the first period. And then I was watching something else. And I was like, oh, the period's probably back. So I flip it on. And they're already up 2-0.
Yeah, they scored two times in about like 35 seconds in the first 2 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's 2-0.
I flipped it on literally right after the second goal, and I was like, wow, Quinnipiac's up 2-0, and then BC scores on the first shift after that. And I'm just like...
On a power play.
Yeah, they get a penalty right after, and then boom, they score. It's like...
Buchergrass was probably radioing down. I'm like, guys, we're gonna need power play.
And I felt like that was just a big emotional swing for Quinnipiac. They needed to consolidate that multi-goal lead. And then BC ties it. But
they take the lead.
QPAC scores back.
And then a power play.
BC scores on the power play again.
And then they score again.
Yeah, Quillen, who was signed yesterday by the Maple Leafs. I think Graf is supposed to be signing today, but I don't know by who. But anyway, Quillen scores on the power play from Graf. It's a bounce off the end boards, and he just shoots it in. And now it's like, wow.
This might happen.
Maybe I just got the lead because Rand Pecknold is going to run his 1-3-1 and just try to do everything he can to
choke the life out of
him. Yeah, and they do a decent job of it. BC wasn't getting a ton of great looks in that third period. No penalties were going to be called. They were hanging on. And then there's an entry that they just kind of have Minetian, that's how you pronounce his name, Aram Minetian, kind of sneaks past a couple guys and Gauthier, you know, slips in the pass. And he's still in the high slot, and Duplessis comes like way far out to challenge, and he just beats him. And I think what was frustrating about that for QPAC, if I'm a Bobcat fan, is we're going to lose to like BC or have them tie the game and get that huge goal. I want it to be three incredible plays where they're snapping it around, and then you know, Gauthier taps it in back door and that kind of thing. Not this guy I've never heard of beating my goalie clean from like the high slot.
That's fair.
So And then it just kind of felt, well, now that they've tied it, they're probably going to win it. And then that overtime goal for Jack Malone, very strange overtime goal. Puck comes in on Duplessis, and he just like doesn't freeze it, and it just sits there. And they're like, oh, the puck's still free. And then it rolls through the crease while he's like laying on the ice, and then it just gets tapped in the empty net. But that was going on during the Michigan game.
Right.
They had just put Michigan on a different channel to start. But overall, I came away thinking that BC looked a lot more vulnerable than anticipated. We were pretty dismissive of this regional last week, and it ended up being really, really
as
interesting.
As good a regional as, yep, as the...
Really interesting regional.
The Maryland Heights one. Well, we'll get more into BC for sure, and then DU and BU a little bit next week. But pretty good weekend, really good weekend for Michigan and probably for college hockey, because going into next weekend, the Frozen Four, you're going to have there's going to be a lot of fan bases that travel a lot. There's a lot of success that's happened with all of these teams. And it's ironically not going to feature any teams from Minnesota in St. Paul.
Several people pointed out that Michigan and Denver were in a Frozen Four with two Minnesota teams in Boston, and now they're in a Minnesota Frozen Four with two teams from Boston.
Yeah. So, that was Nate Wells. Nate Wells said that, I think.
Yeah, I had pointed that out a few days earlier, okay, that there was the chance that could happen, and then he tweeted it, and I was like, ah, beat me to it. But we have a few news and notes things to take care of real quick.
Okay.
The Gophers, breaking news this hour, are keeping Jimmy Snuggerud, contrary to prior reporting that he was going to be signing, which to me sounds like the Blues wanted to sign him and then they didn't. There are reports of NIL being a factor there. So,
all right.
Good news for the Gophers. Other piece of news, transfer portal has been heating up. So by the time we talk next week, very possible that Michigan will get people out of the portal. We'll see what happens. But yesterday was the main day of everyone jumping in the portal, and now we'll see what happens. But a few guys have already been retrieved from the portal and signed with new teams, so we'll see what Michigan's up to, and we'll go from there. But definitely a big exodus of players from the CCHA and the ECAC and the Atlantic Hockey, so there's a lot of intriguing names, and I'm curious to see what Hirado is going to do out of the portal, and we'll see if there's any new names to talk about next week. Michigan HockeyCast 6.22 for Alex Drain and David Nastanak. Next week, the Frozen Four preview and a discussion of the folks from Chestnut Hill.